Chapter 11, Going Beyond Data Collection and the Feedback Sandwich. Getting into classrooms on a daily basis is the most transformative habit we can develop because it gives us something most instructional leaders lack: firsthand knowledge about the teaching and learning taking place every day in our schools. When we regularly visit all of our teachers, we get to know them and their students better. We know how they teach, how they run their classrooms, and what they're working on. We know how to support them through our work outside of the classroom, and we know what kinds of professional development they need to continue growing. Just as important, teachers get the benefit of an expert sounding board, another professional who can provide a different perspective and engage in deep conversations about teaching and learning. Danielson, 2015. Although regular classroom visits do provide rich and valuable information, it's important to define the appropriate audience for that information: teachers and the instructional leaders who work with them directly. Seeing classroom visits primarily as a vehicle for obtaining data to report to third parties, such as district administrators, undermines our overall aims. But if we instead treat ourselves and the teachers we support as the most direct beneficiaries of our efforts, and our students as the most important beneficiaries, we'll approach our visits differently. Specifically, we'll strive to ensure that we're producing decisional information, actionable insights derived from powerful conversations with teachers, and not just data. But in most schools, data collection is the primary, if not sole, purpose of instructional leaders' classroom visits. In this chapter, we explore how data collection and feedback can undermine professional conversations, as well as how feedback can be disconnected from teacher goals. Learn why data collection undermines professional conversations. Data-driven walkthroughs come from the best of intentions. In a district where principals seldom venture into classrooms, requiring walkthrough data may seem like a reasonable way for a superintendent to bring about change. Getting into classrooms, for any reason at all, is better than staying in the office. And collecting data, whether on student engagement, the teaching strategies that educators use, or any other dimension of teaching and learning, seems like a reasonable way to focus instructional leaders' attention in the classroom and hold them accountable for actually getting into classrooms. If the data can be useful to the district, the thinking goes, even better. Too often, though, the data go unused, the accountability benefit is minimal, and the very purpose of visiting classrooms is undermined. This is particularly true when data collection focuses on checklists, frequency counts, rating scales, and other quantitative indicators, which provide a very narrow range of information and capture very little classroom-specific context. This context is essential for having rich, evidence-based conversations about teaching practice, yet it's missing from most data collection instruments. While it might appear that instructional leaders can collect data while also capturing rich, descriptive evidence, effectively killing two birds with one stone, any effort to collect data has a narrowing effect on the observer's attention. When we know what we're looking for, we tend to focus only on that and miss other important features of a classroom. Our conversations tend to be much richer and more valuable to teachers when we visit with an open mind, rather than a narrow focus on data collection. For their part, teachers are less interested in data. A 2012 MetLife survey found that fewer than half of high school teachers considered using data to improve instruction to be an important leadership skill. MetLife, 2013. Teachers may even actively resist if instructional leaders do not treat them as the primary beneficiaries of classroom visits. In a major metropolitan district where I've consulted, I learned that administrators visited classrooms on the first day of school with rating forms in hand. Wanting to start the year off right, these well-meaning leaders gave tough but honest ratings to as many teachers as they could visit. Caught off guard and offended by low ratings for rigor and other aspects of practice that may not be the top priority on the first day of school, teachers revolted. And they were right to be angry at this inappropriate use of data. Teachers know that data can be useful, but they're also painfully aware that data can be used against them. Because data collection tends to narrow our focus as observers, and because it tends to put teachers in a defensive posture, I recommend that you eliminate data collection activities from your practice of visiting classrooms. A suggestion for districts needing data. If a district truly needs reliable quantitative data, a more cost-effective and valid way to collect them is to train less costly workers, such as graduate students, to design and carry out scientifically valid sampling procedures. School administrators are among a district's most expensive employees, making the data they collect far more expensive, and are also subject to numerous factors that shape how they spend their time. This introduces systematic distortions in sampling. For example, most school leaders spend more time dealing with interruptions in the afternoon, so most of their data collection is likely to occur in the earliest part of the school day. A carefully designed sampling procedure and trained data collectors can help districts avoid the waste and sampling problems inherent in data collected by administrators. If your district is interested in collecting valid, reliable data on classroom practice, you may want to consider reaching out to local universities, whose graduate students often need real-world opportunities to practice their skills in designing studies and collecting data. Many districts, of course, use walkthrough data more to hold administrators accountable for visiting classrooms than for any research or improvement purpose. If you want to hold instructional leaders accountable, ask to see their records of classroom visits. Understand why the feedback sandwich undermines professional conversations. We've all experienced the feedback sandwich at some point in our careers. The sequence is probably familiar: a compliment, followed by a suggestion for improvement, and then another compliment. It seems reasonable enough. Every lesson has both strengths and weaknesses that the teacher could address, and ensuring that compliments outnumber suggestions is a way to make the experience feel more positive. But as a foundational structure for instructional leadership interactions, the feedback sandwich leaves much to be desired. First, the feedback sandwich requires the instructional leader to do the bulk of the thinking and deciding. If we want teachers to improve their teaching practice, they must fully engage in this important intellectual work and ultimately make the decisions about how they will change their practice. Conversation is capable of stimulating this level of intellectual engagement, Danielson, 2015. However, the feedback sandwich is not. Even if the roles are reversed, asking teachers to reflect on a strength, an area for improvement, and another strength does far less to raise the quality of thinking and decision-making than does a rich, evidence-based conversation. Rather than strive to provide compliments and suggestions for improvement, you can stimulate greater growth by engaging teachers in deep conversations about teaching and learning, based on what actually takes place during your visit. Second, despite our best efforts as instructional leaders, our compliments and suggestions are seldom useful to the teacher because they're based on our reactions to a very small portion of a lesson and fail to take into account the teacher's previous decisions and goals. While our evaluation criteria may offer generic descriptions of good teaching that are applicable to all grades and subject areas, there is no perfect lesson, and certainly not one that we can observe in 10 or 15 minutes. We can only judge the quality of a lesson in relation to the teacher's goals for the lesson, and when we visit classrooms, we often don't have enough perspective to make accurate judgments. For example, one issue I encountered frequently as an elementary principal was the varied degree of mastery expected by the end of each mathematics lesson. Our school used a spiral-style mathematics curriculum in which the teachers introduced concepts gradually over time. As a result, they rarely expected students to master or even achieve fluency with a concept or process in a single lesson. Evaluating the success of such lessons required talking with the teachers about what they had taught previously, what they would teach next, and how well the lesson achieved the teacher's instructional goals for that day. Finally, the typical feedback approach tends to treat each classroom visit as a self-contained interaction that doesn't leave any loose ends or ambiguity. In reality, our conversations with other professionals are ongoing and aren't always resolved after a few minutes of talking. We may identify issues that require more thinking and discussion or more evidence from future visits. If we resist the impulse to neatly wrap up the work of instructional leadership into a tidy feedback sandwich package, we can avoid giving ill-informed feedback and can better support our teachers in improving their skills over time. An unintended consequence of the feedback sandwich. For the small number of teachers who may be facing a negative evaluation at year's end, the practice of giving a written compliment, followed by a suggestion and then another compliment, may provide an unintended consequence. These sandwiches can bolster a teacher's claim that a negative evaluation is unfounded and unfair. If you've packaged all of your written feedback into this format, consider the resulting ratio: two compliments praising the teacher's strengths for every suggestion made. If the teacher has implemented your suggestions yet hasn't improved to a satisfactory level, will your final evaluation withstand scrutiny? Let's say you've visited the teacher's classroom 15 times, providing a well-crafted feedback sandwich after each visit. If the teacher can provide 30 or more specific compliments you've given, plus 15 specific suggestions that he or she has implemented, it's likely that your negative evaluation will be overturned by your supervisor, your human resources department, your school board, or a judge or arbitrator. To avoid this situation, avoid the feedback sandwich. Focus your feedback on the evidence itself, what actually happened while you were in the classroom. And if you have concerns, communicate them clearly. Despite its good intentions, the feedback sandwich is an artificial structure that only introduces confusion. Avoid feedback unrelated to teachers' goals. Too often, we make suggestions that are irrelevant to teachers because they're unrelated to teachers' goals. Consider the origin of feedback as an audio term. Musicians place monitors on the stage so they can hear how they sound through the sound system. This feedback helps them perfect their performance, but it's important to note the source of the sound, the musicians themselves. Feedback is thus an amplified sound signal that returns to its source, not an external critique. Stone and Heen, 2014. When we give teachers unsolicited suggestions and call them feedback, we're ignoring this basic principle. Our feedback must provide teachers with useful information relevant to their goals. Too often, our default approach to providing feedback is to focus on what stands out to us most during our visit, which may or may not be relevant to the teacher's goals. For example, many secondary administrators often focus on student engagement, and while engagement is an important issue, it may not be the right focus for every teacher. Teachers may benefit far more from feedback on other aspects of their practice, which they'll gladly share if asked what they'd like feedback on. This not only leads to more relevant feedback, but also to feedback that teachers are more receptive to. What teachers want more than feedback is for leaders to notice them. They want their instructional leaders to acknowledge their goals, their decisions, and their successes. The 2012 MetLife Survey of the American Teacher, 2013, reports that, quote, "Teachers say that it is most important for a principal to have had experience as a classroom teacher," end quote, suggesting that empathy, rather than advice, is what teachers want from their instructional leaders. Noticing what teachers are striving to accomplish is perhaps the most straightforward approach to instructional leadership. All you need to do is enter the classroom with open eyes and an open mind. All too often, though, we enter the classroom with blinders on. Blinders created by a narrow focus on data collection or a preoccupation with coming up with a suggestion for improvement. In a successful lesson, it's entirely possible that we won't need to make any suggestions. In fact, our feedback can get in the way of teacher reflection, Danielson, 2015. If we want to maximize teacher growth, we must free ourselves from the burden of being the source of that growth and open our minds to the possibility that our conversations with teachers can be open-ended without tidy conclusions and clear action items. In the best conversations with the best teachers, we may often find that there's no immediate resolution or action plan for follow-up. This is perfectly normal in conversations. Do your conversations with family or friends always end with a suggestion for improvement or a next step? Certainly not. And this lack of closure should be an acceptable outcome in any discussion as complex as those about teaching and learning. Day 11 Action Challenge: Break the Suggestion Habit. If you are currently collecting data and making suggestions for improvement as part of your practice of visiting classrooms, stop, at least temporarily, so you can experience the power of more fully noticing what teachers are striving to accomplish, and so you can engage in more open and authentic conversations. Each time you're tempted to make a suggestion for improvement, think about the teacher as a learner, capable of making self-directed improvement decisions. You may want to consider the following questions for reflection. What kinds of information could I share that could lead to greater reflection and a change in the teacher's practice without making a suggestion? When was the last time I received data that helped me make an improvement decision? What made these data useful? When was the last time I received feedback that helped me make a change? What characterized this feedback?